Welcome to the Chirpin' Birds podcast. We are back from our brief hiatus as the Eagles season comes to an end. After a collapse of epic proportions, they lose to Tampa Bay 32-9. We'll briefly talk about the game since the game happened over a week ago and another entire round of playoff football has been played. We'll talk more about the news and such, but we just didn't really feel the need to record a post-game podcast after that debacle. And now that Nick and Howie have addressed the public, we have a lot more to talk about. So before we get started, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I think having the break has certainly cooled off some feelings about the end of the season here. I think there's been a lot of news and it's came really quick, or there's been like a lot of bits of news here and there after a long standstill. I think that's what made, I would say, how the season ended, then the playoff loss, and then just radio silence. that was a bit of torture, but I'm glad that there's some clarity. Frankly, like last weekend, it was a bit refreshing to not have to subject ourselves to Eagles football. So I know that that's kind of you never want to be at that point where you're like, you know what, I'm glad the season's over, but with how that season ended, like, I'm glad that it's over. So that's kind of where I'm at. How have you been? How have you been coping with how the last 2 weeks have gone?
I think I feel that to a much smaller extent. I think I felt that going into the Tampa Bay game. They had been playing horribly for over a month. I didn't expect them to win. I didn't expect them to come out and play well. You know, they didn't have A.J. Brown. I don't know how much of a factor that ended up mattering.
I think that was a huge factor. Like, we saw the type of game Devontae Smith had, and that's, you know, as the only playmaker on offense for the most part.
Even so, I think you're being a little optimistic. Like, they still lost all those games with A.J. Brown. I feel similar to the extent in the moment, finally being put out of our misery of watching the collapse finally end. But the divisional games kind of felt a little sad that a team with as much talent as the Eagles, having just been to the Super Bowl, having beaten a number of teams that are still in it in the regular season, it was kind of a bummer that it got to that point. And I think the inexplicable nature of the team just quitting and not wanting to be there, which obviously some players wanted to, like Jason Kelce talked about it on his podcast, how they work really hard and it's not how they wanted it to end and this and that, but the nothing ever really came together the whole season. They never blew out a team in any game except maybe week three against Tampa, but that game wasn't really confidence building from what I remember. It was a little DeAndre Swift rushed for like 130 yards, but other than that, I don't really remember the offense really clicking on all cylinders at all. This entire year, they never put it together. So I don't know. It just felt kind of sad to not watch the Eagles play in a divisional round. There were a number of exciting games. And I think to your point, the radio silence was kind of concerning. I didn't really know what to think with the coaching staff and with the team and what was going on, but
Yeah. Yeah.
go ahead.
Real quick, I know we don't want to spend too much time on the game, but you did mention Jason Kelce. I don't think it's official yet, but it seems like all indications are pointing to that being the end of Jason Kelce's career in the NFL. It seems like retirement is as sure as it's ever been for him. Now, I am leaving some room for him to think on it and say, I'm coming back. Like, I don't think it's any question about talent. I think it's more about what he wants to explore elsewhere. Obviously, he's got a very bright media career coming forward, even aside from his podcast. He's talked about, thinking of his longevity and how that could be sacrificed, by what you subject your body to in the NFL. But, it's a real bummer to see, if that is the case and he is retiring, for that to be his last game is just a major bummer. I'm not sure about Fletcher Cox. I think he's still got some. I thought he had a really good season. Like, he was one of the few dependable players on the defensive side of the ball. He had a good game, so if that's it for him as an Eagle, I think that was a good walk-off game. I still can't imagine that being his last game as a NFL as an NFL player, but I thought BG had a really good game too. I know he's already alluded to coming back next year. Now, he is a free agent, so that'll have to be a mutual decision, but I imagine the Eagles would welcome him gladly. But other than that, like, yeah, I don't want to think about this game again. I thought that was just, it was a travesty, like, for the Eagles to just be, like, woefully unprepared for Todd Bowles' defensive game plan. Like, I know they're not the same defensive minds, but like you just went up against Wink Martindale in the last game of the season. Like you couldn't have polished up a little bit on your blitz protections. Like all the downfield passing plays. Like it was just like a lot of I don't know if you would consider this good or bad, but like it was obviously negative for the whole offensive staff, but just like the lashing from national media in that playoff game, whether it was in the booth or just like on Twitter, like in the feeds, just like the team's just getting lambasted for being stubborn, not being prepared, having no answers for the blitz. Like in some ways it reminded me of Doug's last game against the Giants when I was just like, what is happening? Like, what are they doing? Like, this is just an embarrassment. And I think that certainly contributed to all the staff changes that we're going to be talking about as we dig in here. But I think, like we talked about how this was between our last podcast, but there was over a week where we were waiting on any sort of news about Nick, and I think the organization played it off. Like, there was never a question. There was no doubt about him coming back, but like, there's no way that's true. Like, there was certainly a world where we're talking about who's the head coach of the Eagles, like, who's in the search. And Nick is back. We learned about that maybe 3 days ago, but I don't think. They can play that game, but I think anybody who paid attention and watched how this kind of crumbled, that they had some serious and tough conversations about whether they wanted him back or not.
Yeah, I can imagine the the uncertainty. I don't doubt that some of the leaks and speculation coming from internal sources, I think that there probably was truth to that. I'm not sure to what extent. I think the social media and some of the media people can really get ahead of where things were at. I think it's a worthy question for Jeffrey Lurie to ask if he should keep Nick or not, or Jeffrey and Howie. But I also think that of the coaches on the market, Nick is up there. I think Nick would be a sought after candidate if he would have gotten fired.
You think in the same
And
cycle? I think he would have to take a break.
well, he would probably take a year
He would
off,
do it like a
but I
Doug
think,
Peterson tour.
right, but I think he would be a top of the list type candidate for whenever he's back on the market. So knowing that, it's kind of like, appreciate what you have to some extent. I didn't think at the end of the season he should have gotten fired. I thought that changes needed to have happened. I wanted a new defensive coordinator, which it looks like we'll be getting, but they did part ways with Desai and Patricia, I think on Monday, something like that. And so I think because of everything that Nick has done over the 3 seasons, he wouldn't have deserved to have gotten fired, and he deserved a shot to prove himself. Now I think his job is on the line this next season, just
Right.
because of how win now they are.
See, I was there.
And
I just needed to see like one glimmer of hope, and like they couldn't even do that. Like they had 7 games to just show me something that looked remotely like a professional offense, and I think I as the over the course of the Tampa game, I think I ended up on the side of, I don't think it's like a no-brainer decision, but I was certainly leaning clean house. I think that was the quickest and cleanest way to move forward. But part of me is still like I genuinely like Nick. I think, and like it's hard not to like him. Like he's associated with a lot of winning, so it's not like, this is like the first kind of stretch where like we have been like massively disappointed with him and the team that he's coached. So I think it's natural to feel that way about like, well, like Nick's been good, and he is kind of a fun guy to be a fan of, like the coach, or sorry, the coach of the team, that is. Now it sounds like you were never pushed on that side of things. It's just like you were pushed closer and closer in that direction, but you were never on the side of let's just make a clean break and we'll start fresh. It sounds like, right?
yeah, I think that would be a major overreaction, because
Yeah, that's fair. I go ahead.
it's just Nick has done nothing but one outside of the last 7 games, and it seemed to me going into this season that he was taking more of a involved approach to both coordinators' duties, whereas with Steichen and Gannon, he trusted Gannon and Steichen to do their thing more. I think that going into this year, there was a management shift in his management style, there's a shift in his management style, I should say, to say that more succinctly. I think from this press conference, it sounded that he wants to, or was directed
to. Yeah, I wouldn't use the word want.
a similar approach to the Super Bowl year, where he trusts his coordinators to do their thing, and his job as head coach is more of the Mike Tomlin or John Harbaugh or Bill Belichick style of being a culture setter, being a manager of the different departments, and being more of the CEO type rather than the McVay or the Shanahan, where they're the brilliant offensive mind and they have a DC that, you know, does their thing, but they're the offense guy. Right. And I think that the Nick as the culture tone setter has not necessarily broken my confidence in him, because there were a number of factors that weren't working, and you know, the defense was bad. That's on Nick because he's the head coach, and it's on Howie because of the roster, but it's less of a Nick concern for me personally, because he comes from the offensive side of the ball. So
yeah,
I don't expect him to like solve the defense. So
yeah, I mean, also the defensive coordinators, I mean, let's not forget about them. They are still,
yeah. I mean, he did hire them. I'm not absolving Nick of blame, but Nick moving forward and his ability to grow. Another thing I look at is like the Phillies just collapsed, and I didn't have a question about Rob Thompson, and they extended Rob Thompson. So, you know, after the Phillies run, Rob Thompson admitted to
I think that's such a different sport, though. Like, it's not.
It is a different sport, but I'm saying if Rob Thompson makes the similar mistakes in the playoffs again, then you start to question his ability to get them to where they need to be. Whereas Nick, I feel like this is his first hiccup as an NFL coach, and there's so much we don't know. We don't know how involved he was with Brian Johnson. We don't know Brian Johnson's ideas for the offense, if Nick shot some down, if Nick let Brian run the offense more so and took the blame, was more of a scapegoat for the staleness of the offense. We don't know. We'll probably never know,
right,
unless Brian Johnson goes elsewhere next year and the offense is a top 10 offense, something like that. I mean, they were seventh in points, I think, this season. I'm not saying that, you know, it was a good year.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, it was a good year, certainly underperformed as far as expectations.
And Howie mentioned in the press conference about like what's an area of growth, what, you know, check the process and check the results and all this stuff and know the difference of what is an area to improve upon or what's an aberration. And I think everyone has to admit that this season was a very weird year for going 10-1, going 10-1 down, you know, 10 points a game and winning all those games and then just completely tanking at the end of the season. You know, there was a unorthodoxness to the season. So all this is to say, I think Nick deserves another shot, and I think we'll find out next season if he is the main problem or has been the main problem, or if it was just a combination of things. I mean, Nick talked about how him and Brian worked together for 3 years and they haven't had much outside voice, new fresh ideas, and you know, that could just be you know, press conference speak, but that's an interesting way to frame letting Brian Johnson go
Right.
and trying to get a new guy in. And depending who they end up hiring as their OC, I'd be curious to see if it's a completely different offensive philosophy, because it seemed like when they were hiring at least Sean Desai, it was they want a guy that will cater to what Nick wants to do versus, and Brian Johnson was an internal promotion, which I think at the time they felt that they had to do or else they would lose him. They knew he was going to be an OC somewhere else.
Right.
So at the time it made a lot of sense to promote him. And a first time OC and a DC that was a DC like for half a season or whatever it was, you know, who or a defensive assistant, whatever Desai was, like he never had a top 20 defense under him in his career. So it was sort of two inexperienced coordinators with a head coach who hasn't had to deal with, you know, coordinators that were as inexperienced. Like I'm not really sure where, I forget where Gannon and Steichen were prior to the Sirianni hiring, but I assume that they were with the Colts or the Chargers
Yeah, I
or
think it was
something
the
like that.
Chargers. But
So all these things are kind of point towards an unknown as to Nick's leadership ability. I don't think that he should have the same managerial style going into the season. I think he should let his coordinators take the reins in a lot of ways, because if he can be that culture setter, tone setter, manager person that's the head coach, then his coordinators can do their thing and you kind of have a better idea of organizationally how things are laid out. Obviously, he's going to have his hand in everything, but I just think that there's a lot more to find out about Nick as a head coach, and you're not going to find that out if you fire him, obviously, and you're going to have to deal with a whole new regime change, and the whole team is going to have to deal with a regime change. If you clean house and then hire someone, what if that coach sucks? Like Nick doesn't suck. He just they just kind of got, I don't even know what happened, really. It got stale and then they weren't on the same page.
Right. Well, I think what's a
So
bit confusing to me, like you want to retain Nick, and we'll also say Michael Clay, who is that Michael Clay is a testament of waiting, giving a chance to have a rebound, and that paid off. It just strikes me a little odd to fire Brian Johnson, fire Sean Desai. You want to keep Nick, but you want to minimize his involvement with the offensive scheming. And it's just, like I feel like you kind of set yourself up for that merry-go-round for, say you strike gold and the next offensive coordinator really captures the talent that this offense has and you get those results. Well, guess what? He's going to be the next hot candidate to become a head coach. And then, maybe you have another guy and maybe it's, this isn't to like pan Brian Johnson, but maybe you have an offensive coordinator who's just not ready or who disappoints, like, then what do you do? Like, that's why you do see these offensive, like, you know, the Shanahans and McVays. Like, that's, you know, you get that so you can retain that. You have that, you know, that's your offensive identity, and it's not going to have to rotate every year or so because your hot candidate OC got poached because he had such a good year. Like, it seems like it's a half measure to me to retain him but strip his say in the offense. You know, it's like, okay, you just like what he does as a culture setter and like how he manages his coaches. Like, I'm not saying that there's not merit in that. It's just not the traditional route. Like, I think Tomlin and Harbaugh and Pete Carroll, up until he was let go, like, to me, those are exceptions to the rule. Those aren't like good examples of like, oh yeah, this works all the time. Like, you don't, that's not a frequent model for the NFL. So to me, I'm not saying it can't work. And, you know, frankly, I'm glad that they will be getting new voices. I think that this was their best way to get new voices, short of bringing in a new offensive-minded head coach. Like, it's kind of the second door of shaking things up on offense. Like, you know, bringing in a new OC. I think, you know, I am excited to see how they can bring fresh ideas to what was an offense that got stale towards the end. It just leaves me a little puzzled about, like, to me, it seems like they're not firing Nick to, like, save face. Like, they don't want to have a black mark as an organization that was, like, too rash and fired a coach that made the playoffs back-to-back years, or back-to-back-to-back years.
Well, that could be part of it, but I think it's hard to tell until they hire an offensive coordinator. Like, it seems like they're going to hire Vic Fangio for the defense. Right. He's obviously not going to leave for a head coaching job.
The defensive coordinator that was promised.
Right. And on offense, like, I don't know if they have any intention to interview Arthur Smith, but he was a well-viewed offensive coordinator that failed as a head coach. Brandon Staley was a highly viewed coordinator that failed as a head coach.
But what do you
Eberflus, you know, there's a lot of coordinators that are first-time head coaches that fail.
Right.
And I think that's pretty common. Dayball, Joe Brady hasn't gotten a head coaching job. Bieniemy hasn't.
Right.
So I think, like, Joe Brady's an example that had a lot of head coaching opportunity, you know, interviews or opportunity or whatever, and never got a gig. And then became interim.
But does it not, you know, strike you a bit that they, like, the decision that they made, I don't know, to me it just feels like a compromise. Like, all right, you can come back and coach as long as you start over from scratch. You gotta go get new coordinators after you had to get new coordinators this offseason. And I know that they'll have more time because last offseason was a lot shorter. They were much further behind in the interview portion of finding candidates. But, like, you got to go get new coordinators again. And, you know, I have a hard time believing that Nick Sirianni volunteered to give up the offensive reins. So, like, I don't know. To me, I'm not saying it's a bad idea. Like,
well,
I just
he gave up play calling,
right? But now he's giving up like Steichen. Just offensive duties, like, you know.
No, not necessarily.
I mean, he basically said that, you know, they're not throwing their offensive scheme in the trash, but they're making some heavy cuts to it because the new offensive coordinator that they're bringing in will be bringing in a new scheme. They'll be calling the plays. They'll be working with the quarterback. It just seems like his offensive role will be heavily minimized. It didn't strike you that way? It feels like he's on offensive probation.
It struck me as going back to what it was like the Super Bowl year with Steichen. I would imagine Steichen had a great deal of input into the offense.
Yeah. To me, it didn't seem like that was Shane Steichen's offense. Shane Steichen was the play caller.
No, it was collaborative, and that's what Nick said in the press conference, that it's the Philadelphia Eagles' offense. It's not his offense. It's not whoever the OC is offense.
Yeah, but in the past, he's said that it is my offense. So, like,
I know.
I think if you go
like
back to last year,
it's a change in philosophy.
I think if you went back to last year when Shane Steichen was here, I think Shane and Nick would both agree that this was Nick Sirianni's offense. And that's not to say that Shane Steichen obviously didn't have a big part in its success. I don't think it's going to be like that next year. It didn't read like that to me today. It sounds like Nick's taken a firm step back. And I could be wrong. I wouldn't, like, to me, I don't think it's going to be like last year.
When it came out that he gave up play calling to Shane Steichen, it at first was viewed as, you know, dysfunction, or he wasn't as good at his job or something. You know, it was seen negatively. But it didn't leak when it actually happened. It leaked like after the season or something like that, or weeks later. And so Nick could be like, yeah, well, we did this a while ago, so I could focus on communication and all that stuff. So it's not a new concept for Nick to give up something to focus on doing a head coach responsibility.
Yeah, but to me, play calling is a much smaller responsibility to give up than the offensive design. Like, do you think that Nick's going to still be contributing to the same degree in that area this season? Because, like, to me, it doesn't read that way.
He's the head coach.
I'm not saying he won't be attending offensive meetings. I'm saying it sounds like he is going to be further removed from the offense. You think that won't change?
I think the change will probably be, and obviously this is speculation because we're not there.
Right.
I think the bigger change is more in the vetoing, or the saying, no, we should do it this way, or, you know, the final say type.
Yeah, it sounds like the new offensive coordinator will have more autonomy, which in my mind means Nick's going to have less.
I just view it as more collaborative. I don't view it as like a power play or,
yeah, no, I'm not, you know, I'm not saying
a high or low status situation. I don't know that I'm not saying you're wrong about any of this. I just think that it's jumping to conclusions to say like Nick is a figurehead and the real like play callers and scheme people are going to be the coordinators. Like, the coordinators are coordinators for a reason, and they can focus more on scheme and play calling and play design and all that stuff because they don't have to worry about all the other stuff that the head coach has to worry about.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's likely somewhere in between us, but to me, this reads like Jeffrey Lurie Mostly him, but maybe to some degree how he sang. All right, Nick. That was pretty ugly. We think you still have a lot to bring to the table, and we're willing to let this ride. But you're not going to be the mastermind behind our offense. We're going to bring in somebody new. We're going to really shake up our scheme. And we're going to bring that person from outside the building. That's what it looked like to me, or that's what it sounded like to me.
I think that's a horrendous way to run your organization,
I mean,
to frame it that way at least.
I feel like that's probably, I feel like you're giving it the optimistic interpretation, and I'm
I'm not saying I'm not it I'm not it's not the optimistic interpretation. I think at most of what you're saying is Jeffrey says something like, the offense can't, or the offensive philosophy can't continue the way it is because of how ugly that was and how stale, and like something it need we need a revamped offense, or we need something, we need a different vision for the offense that's you can keep what has worked, but we need a drastic shift in how the offense is run, and it's on you to hire the right people to get that done. Like the way that you frame it is so disempowering for a head coach. It's like a Chip Kelly, Howie situation all over again, where you're putting Nick in a closet and saying whoever you hire as your OC is going to effectively be more powerful than you in the
Well,
hierarchy.
I do think
Like, why
they're.
would Jeffrey Lurie do that?
Well,
He,
I think.
I think he could meddle and say we need a different offense. If nothing changes, then I can't justify keeping you. So hire someone with a vision that you can work with.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, it's
That's much more empowering than like we're gonna bring someone in. Like if Jeffrey Lurie is having to sign off on Nick's hires, then he may as well just fire Nick if he can't trust Nick to hire his coaching staff.
I mean, to me, I
I
don't think
mean, I
that's
mean,
that far-fetched of an idea. Like, I do think, like, to me, like, this could be completely wrong, but I think we can read in between the lines of the Eagles not making a statement earlier that they had their reservations about bringing Nick back. And I'm sure they had at least internal conversations about exploring the other head coach candidates. To me, this seems like, all right, we have some conditions on this thing moving forward. And I wouldn't be surprised if one of the big ones is we're really going to change this offense. And I don't think you could certainly look at that as them stripping power from Nick, but I still think I think they're just going to empower him in a different way, which is, giving him more of that team oversight and lightening his offensive responsibilities. And this is all like hours after the press conference, so there's going to be more intel leaked, reported. So like I think this picture will become less foggy, but I guess this is why I feel like a little iffy about the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that there was hesitation after the season ended of bringing him back or not. There were the reports that said that he's has to justify him keeping his job, and he's like fighting for his job or whatever. I don't know how exaggerated those are, but I can imagine the thought of letting Nick go, it was a realistic one. But they are keeping him, and you know, Doug was there for 5 years and was asked to present a plan, and I just think that situation was a little different, and it was kind of like Doug needs to present his plan, and to save his job, and I didn't feel like Nick needed to save his job, and it is awkward for an organization to come out and say we're not firing our employee, where like if they were just gonna retain him, then you just retain them. Like, it's not news to say every so often, like, we're not firing you.
Well, here's
if you're just gonna keep your job.
Here's the distinction, though. I don't think anybody was expecting the organization to make a formal declaration of Nick's continuing employment. Every team in the NFL has their national reporters who can send out a tweet that says, you know, even though there was a lot of frustration with how the season ended, like, there's no doubt that Nick Sirianni will be returning as head coach of the Eagles, and the leadership has continuing confidence in his abilities to lead this team. Like, we see those tweets all the time. It's a little bit strange, and we didn't really talk about this just yet, but you know, the Cowboys loss to the Packers, that has certainly softened the blow of the Eagles end of the season. But like, you know, the Cowboys, they're not a normal organization. Like, that was a, you know, they were the team that made a formal announcement that Mike McCarthy is back. Like, the Eagles but wouldn't do that.
That's a different situation, because they failed year after year under Mike McCarthy. Nick Sirianni has gone to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to compare the tenures of the coaches, but as far as, you know, your point of like, well, would you expect them to like say Nick Sirianni's back on letterhead? Like, no. The Cowboys did that because they're just a different organization. Like, that's Jerry World. Like, they do their things by Jerry's rule, not by like the rule of PR.
Yeah.
That was just my point there. Yeah. I think there's a lot to kind of wait and see. I'm sure. You know, I certainly look forward to the names that they'll be connected to as they continue their offensive coordinator search. So far, there has been I believe three. The first name that was floated out there, this was before it was solidly reported that Brian Johnson wasn't coming back, and that was Jim Bob Cooter, which was a name that got nobody excited. But Jim Bob, he was a consultant with the Eagles, I think, a few years ago. Most recently, he was the offensive coordinator with the Colts under Shane Steichen. I forget where I saw this, but I think the distinction there was he could interview and like potentially get that offensive coordinator job. I don't think that's that likely anymore, but because Shane Steichen has play calling duties with the Colts, and if Jim Bob was to come to the Eagles and get those play calling duties, even though that's a lateral position jump, he would get that other bump for the play calling duties. But that was the first name, Jim Bob. What was your, you know, your initial reaction to that name?
Not that excited. Yeah. You know, he's with the Lions. that with Stafford?
I think so. I don't know if you saw this, but like, there, he had some like pretty gross off the field conduct issues that kind of came to the forefront with
vaguely familiar. With the Lions. Mean, it's not an inspiring.
Yeah, it really did feel like kind of like Nick like panicked and, you know, found a phone number. Not like they're really like scrounging the league and also college to find like the most inventive, fresh offensive minds. Late last night, it was reported that the Eagles had a virtual interview with Cliff Kingsbury, the former Cardinals head coach before Jonathan Gannon. Most recently, he was the senior offensive analyst with USC. I think that was another kind of tepid name connected to the Eagles. Like, okay, I am feeling quite mild. I don't think he, you know, he was just kind of like, he was all right. I don't think he's the type of guy who's going to bring a lot of new, a lot of new wrinkles to your offense. I saw the stats that he's pretty heavy in shotgun. He doesn't have a lot of motion. It's like a lot of downfield passes. Obviously, he's coming from the air raid. And I was like, you know, this sounds a lot like the current Eagles offense. So it kind of feels like they're double dipping in their current offensive scheme. And then the most recent name that was reported today was the Eagles interviewed current Texans QB coach Jared Johnson. So he was working most recently under Bobby Slowick and D'Amico Ryans. And obviously he had quite a good year with rookie C.J. Stroud. So I think so far that's like the most enticing name. But I'm not going to pretend to know too much about that name. And given that, it's kind of funny, like Fangio was, that Schefter tweet was sent during the Eagles press conference and they were asked about it live. And I believe Nick essentially deflected saying, you know, we have a lot of great candidates lined up, and, you know, basically to like try not to confirm it. But if Schefter's saying it, like a deal is likely, a deal is most likely.
Before a contract sign, they can't comment on it.
Yeah. And so that's all to say, like, I think Fangio, I think that's cool. It's not interesting in the way that he was like the de facto defensive coordinator already. So like, it's not like new or exciting, but I think he will, if he is announced as defensive coordinator, he'll bring a lot of competence that the Eagles on the defensive side of the ball haven't had since Jim Schwartz was here. So I look forward to that. But it does kind of put a lot of interest on what this offensive coordinator search turns into. Before the Fangio news broke today, I believe it was the lone name as far as the DC search, and that was Ron Rivera, most recently of the Commanders, which I will say wasn't exciting, but I thought it was, you know, a nice steady move. But now it seems like they were just waiting until the Dolphins officially parted ways with Vic Fangio. Like, all right, sure, Ron, let's talk.
I would have liked Ron. He had top defenses as a DC before getting the Panthers head coaching job. He had, you know, good teams with the Panthers. The Commanders had good defenses the last few, you know, maybe not this past year, but years before.
Yeah, they've been frisky.
He would be a veteran guy that has been a head coach that can just be the defense head coach, and that's it.
Right.
And I think that's definitely what they need on defense, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, Vic Fangio fills that role.
Certainly.
On offense, I'm a little hesitant to. I mean, I don't know, Jared Johnson, at all, really.
Yeah.
But a quarterback's coach, a green, you know, promotion situation for someone.
I mean, in some ways, it's like Brian Johnson. He was the quarterback coach. Yeah.
That's why it makes me...
A fast riser.
I saw a tweet that was a picture of Brian Johnson with a mustache, like, posing as Jared Johnson, which I thought was funny. But I think on offense, they probably need a more experienced guy that... like an Arthur Smith, like someone that won't necessarily leave for a head coaching job. It might be uninspiring. I mean, Kingsbury would be pretty uninspiring, but he wouldn't really leave for a head coaching job anytime soon. I don't know how much they value continuity. That didn't really come up in the press conference from what I remember from earlier today. So that's an interesting theme or, you know, concept that I'm not really sure how Jeffrey Lurie or Howie or Nick or the team view continuity, because when they had continuity, they went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's often when a first-time coordinators on both sides of the ball make it deep in the playoffs. So,
yeah, I think
continuity is important, and the stats probably favor continuity, and I don't know how, you know, fluky that is, or it's just like more often than not it's sort of like the jersey records, like they're better in white than midnight green and all that, like it is what it is, but they play more games in midnight green and all that. So I'm not sure how much value to put in continuity as far as like if they have the talent, just because their coordinators are new, does that mean that they can't go on a deep run? But I think that a lot of the issues towards the end of the year with the communication, with the checking at the line of scrimmage, with the penalties, you know, having to burn timeouts after burning time and this and that, I think that new coordinators are part of that problem because the communication isn't established.
Yeah, I think the, you know, continuity is helpful, and when it's good, it's good, and then when it's bad, like, it is the stagnation, it is when suddenly you're out of offensive ideas and things become stale. So I do think it's about finding the right balance of that. I think right now they need an injection of new ideas and philosophy, and I think, unfortunately, you probably have to sacrifice that for continuity. But I do think it should be a goal to...
Well, they already sacrificed continuity because they fired both their coordinators. I would have been okay if they kept Brian Johnson, because I feel like a first year on the job, there are elements that can be forgiven, but I would be more nervous going into next season than I currently am, because, I mean, I don't know who they're going to hire as the OC, so
maybe, yeah,
I will be just as nervous, but...
I don't know how you would be able to spin that, though. Like, all right, we're bringing back the same offensive tent poles, but the offense is going to be better, I promise. Like, I sure, like, people progress and get better, but I'm not sure if you could have spiced up this offense without changing some main characters So like I agree with you. I just don't know what's the big change. What's the thing that's going to make this offense new and inventive and creative if you're just going to bring back the same offensive coordinator and play caller. Like that would be a tough thing to sell, I think. The other thing I wanted
I
to
know I don't know the answer, but I think it would be hard to sell for sure, but having not observed it over the course of the season, not knowing the ins and outs, I would believe that it wasn't all on Brian or Nick or whatever. Like I would believe that Jeffrey and Howie would have some confidence in Nick and Brian to grow from this experience. But yeah, I think it's hard to swallow the fact that the offense looked like how it did the last seven games. So
yeah, and I agree. I don't think like it would be unfair to lump like Brian Johnson in with like, you know, the same level of failures like Matt Patricia, and like I even think like Sean Desai. Like I do think, you know, he got a bad rap. I think Brian Johnson got one too. Like, unfortunately, like you can't fire the head coach every time something goes wrong. Like Nick does have that. He's got a shield. Like, unless you want a clean house. So I wouldn't be surprised if Brian Johnson, wherever he lands at this point, I think it's pretty clear that he won't be getting that head coaching job that he's been interviewing for. But I think he's, for whatever reason, like, it just, this year is, things just didn't click on offense, and it's unfortunate. The other thing I wanted to touch on, considering that, like, you know, Nick and the offense and what they're looking for in the new offensive coordinator, the other big thing that I was interested in learning more about and you know, learn in quotations here, because this is a press conference and the team's going to give you the most positive spin to dodge any sort of wrongdoing, was the mechanics of moving on from Sean Desai and turning things over to Matt Patricia as defensive coordinator. Just on background, it was clear that Nick Sirianni, he didn't go out and like cold call Matt Patricia. This was a connection that Howie Roseman had and made. He basically referred Matt Patricia to Nick, and Nick brought him on board like pretty late in the process of things. And there was even that weirdness about the report of him joining the Eagles and the Eagles having it up on their like staff directory and then taking it down. So like there's weirdness from the start. But Howie was asked about his part in that decision, and he said, coach, as in Nick, comes to me and tells me what he's thinking. I trust him with the coaching staff. That's his responsibility. And Nick says it was his call. And I just have the toughest time believing any of that. There's been, I forget where I read this, but there's been, you know, breadcrumbs about, like, this isn't something Nick would do unless he was, like, really pressed to do it, whether, you know, that's coming on under his own volition or if that's coming from who he reports to, as in Jeffrey or Howie. But Nick has such a respect for like coaching that like he wouldn't want to fire somebody in such a whirlwind midseason, and it really all just seems like this is a lie. Like, that's not to say that Nick Sirianni didn't co-sign or agree to do this, But it seems like they're really painting the picture that like Nick just had this idea, and his fingerprints were on it, and they were the first ones there. And to me, it just seems like Nick's taking a bullet here. What's your understanding of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's his job to take the bullets for the team failures. I don't know. From the press conference, he said he thought it was the best decision at the time for the team. I can't imagine how, over two-thirds of the way, three-quarters of the way through the season, thinking that a new defensive play caller with different ideas and different philosophies that the whole defense then needs to learn was a good idea. I mean, in hindsight, it's easy to say that, I suppose, but when I forget if it was Gannon's first season or the it was probably the first season, like the defensive line veterans were complaining that, Gannon's terminology was different and he had different philosophies and stuff like that. And it took some getting used to. And then they had a historic season the Super Bowl year. So I think if they kept, Desai as DC the whole season, one, I don't think it would have gone as poorly because went as bad as it could have gone after it was already
They
really
changed it
bad,
at the
but
worst possible time. It was
right.
after the 49ers, after the Cowboys, and then it was
Yeah.
like four of your weakest opponent
It
offenses.
just
It was
doesn't
just.
make that much sense unless you're running the same defense. Like to learn a whole defense at the most critical part of the regular season.
Well, that's the other thing.
I
They kept on saying, like, the amount of like spin and PR that Matt Patricia's receiving, like when it was first made clear that he was moving on, it was Matt Patricia is not under contract and plans to explore other opportunities. He's a top DC candidate. Yeah, right. I won't hold my breath. The spin that confuses me is they kept on saying he's not running his scheme. He's running Sean Desai's scheme. Well, Matt Patricia was there the whole preseason, so he's there for the install, so like he should know how the defense works. Why would you try to like instill new confusing elements to a defense that isn't yours? Like the pl like I don't think he was just doing Sean Desai's defense. There was clearly there were quotes from the players saying that like they were just confused, like they were just doing new stuff all of a
Yeah,
sudden.
they said a different DC wants different things, wants you to do different things. That was one of the
Yeah, that was
main quotes that I remember.
Darius Slay. One
Yeah,
wants their
so
shoulders robbed, one wants their feet robbed, or something
right.
like that. It's like, all right,
Yeah,
well, that doesn't
that's
sound
funny.
like he's running Sean Desai's defense.
I think someone else said something like that too, but I said at the podcast after it happened, like it just seemed like a desperation move,
Yeah.
and
But do you think it was really Nick's decision? Like, this seems like it was meddling at some level.
mean, in the press conference, Howie said that Nick came to him and told him he was thinking about it.
Yeah, well,
It
if Howie was lying,
they're
that
gonna
must.
be on the same page they're like Nick and Howie are going to be on the same page that whole press conference, whether it's true or not true. So that's all the information we'll get for now.
Maybe that's the deal. They said, all right, Nick, you can come back and be head coach. You're not going to be able, your key won't work to get in the offensive meetings, but we'll take you back under the condition under the condition that you say that this was your idea to go from the side of Patricia. We got a deal. And that's what they were negotiating over the 9 days or so.
I mean, there to some extent, like Nick isn't just a yes person. Like they can mutually agree to part ways. He would get another job. So from Nick's perspective, there has to be incentive for him to stay. Like we can't act that he's handcuffed and his wings have been clipped and all this and that, and he's just gonna stay. You know, Doug Peterson was hired when he was OC under Andy Reid, not really getting, from my recollection, other interviews or real consideration elsewhere. And it was kind of doing, it was believing in the person and hoping that they grow into it. But also, he was the coach after Chip, right? So, mm-hmm.
Well, it went Chip.
There was a,
and then Schumer, and then, you know, semantics interim.
Right.
Speaking of interim, how about Doc Rivers?
Yeah, how about Doc Rivers? Well, that's not interim. He's their head coach now.
Well,
but anyway, you can tell that they wanted less of a headstrong micromanager type guy that had to have it his way after Chip, so they hired Doug. And Nick was an offensive coordinator, not really getting much consideration elsewhere, and given the opportunity to, you know, hire his guys and have his philosophy installed, and they get to the Super Bowl. So there has to be an element of why does Nick want to stay? And, you know, there's a lot of reasons. There's all the talent on offense, a 25-year-old MVP level quarterback, a passionate fan base, a owner that spends, one of the best GMs in the league. Like, there are a lot of elements, but if he's just going to get completely handcuffed and shoved in a closet once the coordinators are hired, then there has to be incentive for him to want to stay, or else it would have been they mutually agreed to part ways or something like that. So there's another side of this calculus of why, you know, Nick's not gonna just lie and do anything to keep his job. Because it's my belief that he's a good leader and someone that would get a head coaching job elsewhere, considering his winning percentage. I mean, he's one of the, right now, I think the winningest coach in Eagles history or something like that. So at least under Jeffrey Lurie is the highest winning percentage so far. It's been 3 years, but it's not the most perfect metric, but there has to be another side of this as well. And something like switching the defensive play caller, I don't know what it looks like. I don't know if it's like he's directed something has to change or you need to try something, you know, Howie or Jeffrey pushing for some change or some result, and that's Nick's decision to try that. That's a possibility. So it's Nick's decision, but he's sort of pressured or incentivized to do something by his superiors. Or it was just Nick's decision. I mean, I can understand Jeffrey. Jeffrey's very involved, and I don't think it's meddling too much to say, you know, something has to change. It's his team. And whatever was going on all year wasn't working. The offense never looked like it did last, or, you know, the Super Bowl year. So there has to be reason for Nick to want to stay. And there has to be some directive towards Nick by Jeffrey or Howie. So I think it's more collaborative than it seems to be one way or the other. I mean, I don't see why Nick needs to beg for his job. I think he needs to prove himself, and he said so himself in the press conference. He needs to prove that he can continue to do this in Philly. I think that another year of mediocrity and staleness is grounds for his firing. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that he's gonna be completely like castrated or what, you know, whatever visual descriptor you want to use and keep his job, right? Just to keep his job. I mean, so there's a lot of mystery, and I'm wondering who they'll hire for offensive coordinator. I would assume Vic Fangio will become official sometime.
Yeah, do you want to call your shot on offensive coordinator you think they ultimately hire? Let's take out any of the reported ones. Just, you know, we'll take out Jim Bob, we'll take out Gerard Johnson, and we'll take out Cliff Kingsbury. You can go with Arthur Smith. I have written off Arthur Smith purely on how he refused to use offensive playmakers. You know, whether it was Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts, that was just a circus
season. I didn't watch too much Falcons this past year. I don't know. I would need to like look at a list or something.
Well, you said Eric. You said you would like Eric Bieniemy.
I'm interested in Bieniemy, but
or is he a package with Ron Rivera?
No, I mean he did eviscerate the Eagles defense, but the Eagles defense was not very good, so it was probably easier to eviscerate than other defenses. It's kind of clouded with his time in Kansas City because of Andy Reid. It's hard to know.
This might be, well, I'll throw out two and I'll give you a sec to think. Right. You already mentioned him, I believe, but Joe Brady. He was the offensive designer for Joe Burrow's historic season at LSU. He was he filled in as interim offensive coordinator for the Bills after they fired their offensive coordinator.
He's with the Panthers.
Yeah, the Bills, Panthers, Saints. So I think he would be a good option. He's young. I think, you know.
Isn't that a lateral move though, or the Bills are gonna?
Well, I think the Bills would have to hire him as their offensive coordinator. So I think that would make all the sense in the world for them to do, but you never know. And then the other name that I've seen cited, Zach Robinson. He most recently was he's with the Rams. He's the pass game coordinator and quarterback coach
So he's worked with Matt Stafford. You know, he's helped unlock Puka Nacua. Obviously, he's had success the past few seasons. So I think that would be an enticing name. He's 37. Not to be ageist, but I do think, like, offensive coordinator, I think that's one where, like, if you're looking for new inventive wrinkles to your offense, I do think you'd have better luck just shooting a little bit younger. While on defense, like, I think there's value in having that wisdom of having, you know, gone up against every single, like, offensive play in the book. So those are two names. Do you got one for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think Brady's probably the one that I would be curious about. That's, I'm sure there's a number of quarterback coaches that are looking for promotions. I honestly don't know that many names. There's probably college guys that that are hot names. So I'll just be curious to see what names kind of pop up. I mean, Kingsbury, I think, is the uninspired sort of safer maybe choice. Not safer in that he's going to be good, but safer in that he'll come in with a plan and has experience. Yeah, I don't really know who I would want for offensive coordinator, honestly, but of a type, I would say more experience that I would probably lean towards, because a first-time offensive coordinator, I do think, well, you know, there it's already hard enough to have a good offense in the league, but on top of that, they're fighting, like, lack of experience and doing it for the first time. So I think it's not, if it's like a stud future person, like the Rams guy you mentioned, and you just see what happens this year, but you think he's a guy to build for the future. I mean, they probably thought that in Brian Johnson. So, you know, look, how that ended up. But then I can buy that as someone that they're trying to grow into a longer term role, but that kind of guy ends up getting head coaching offers in a year or two. So I don't really know what to expect. I think I would feel safe with an OC that probably won't leave for a head coaching gig, just for continuity and for Jalen to, you know, Jalen's best season was after having the same coaches. So
right.
I do think continuity matters.
Are you any bit disappointed that the defensive coordinator search was, like, over before it even started? Like, I know we got Rivera. I think there was Wink Martindale's name was thrown out there. I don't think they interviewed him, but then there's also Ryan Nielsen, who was later hired by the Jags.
I would have liked Rivera more. I think if they weren't going to get Ron Rivera, I would sort of feel nervous. Like, Mike Caldwell was interviewed. That wasn't very inspiring to me.
But, like, in the sense it sounds like it's a done deal for Fangio. Are you a little bit disappointed that we weren't seeing more names, seeing more? Like, I think when it is.
No, I mean, I wanted him last year, so.
Right, but where I was going to go with this is, like, when you're interviewing candidates, maybe this is more so for head coaches, but I don't see why it couldn't apply for coordinators too. It's like, it's an opportunity to exchange ideas, make more connections, kind of see see what ideas are out there that you weren't considering or have heard about. Like, it's a period where you can like really pollinate,
yeah,
or cross pollinate.
I see what you mean.
And they're just like, nope, Fangio is fired. We're hiring him. Give us the Fangio.
Well, I think the difference is that I wanted a DC that was experienced, that had his philosophy, and that could be the head coach of the defense. And just like, here's the defense, go have fun. That's your thing.
Right.
So he checks that box. And if I wasn't looking for that, then I would be upset that, you know, they didn't interview a bunch of different people to see who like the next up and coming person would be.
Right. And it is.
So he fits the mold of what I wanted them to do. So I'm sort of like, oh, they got Vic Fangio. Great.
Yeah. And I do think it's positive that he was a consultant with the Eagles. Like, there's already been like a vibe check. Like, I think, Sirianni must be cool with him on some level. It seems like Howie and Lurie are like in love with him. Like, they were like, Fangio was the one that got away, and now they got him. So hopefully that'll hold him over at least for a few seasons.
And he had good, really good numbers with the Dolphins last year, and all of his disciples are really bad. So it's great that we got the real deal, the real thing.
Yeah, are you saying this past season? Because I think this was his first season with the Dolphins, right? And first of
yeah, this past season. But his like disciples, his coaching tree people, haven't really had much success. I think Desai is one of them. So
yeah, I think if there are like when you look at the Dolphins' numbers from this past season, they were quite underwhelming. They did deal with a lot of injuries this year, and it seemed like he and McDaniels, it seemed like there was some clashing involved. And it seemed like some players were rubbed the wrong way with Fangio. Now, that doesn't strike me as, like, big red flags, but this is a homecoming for him in some sorts. I know he's not, like, from Philly, but he's from like the suburbs, I think, and he's a Philly sports guy. Scranton. So I think it's always nice when you come home. Maybe he gets the bump in coming to PA. So I think it's a decent outcome. We'll at least find out if it's what it was, if it's what ultimately stopped us from winning the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah. All right. Well, the search for OC will continue, and in all but officialness, the DC search is done. We'll be back when there's news. It's officially the off season. Do you want to give your picks for the championship games?
Sure.
As our last segment.
Yeah. So.
Who's in the Super Bowl?
Well, I guess what I'm rooting for is Lions, obviously. Do you happen to know what the lines are for that? I imagine the 49ers are like...
Yeah, I'll pull them up.
All right. Well, while you pull them up, I'm going to say the 49ers are 6.5-point favorites.
The 49ers?
Yeah.
I have Niners minus 7.
So okay, so pretty close. I obviously we're rooting for the Lions. I don't think that's a tough call, but I do think the Niners win, unfortunately, in advance to the Super Bowl. And then, give me yours for the NFC. What do you want and what do you expect?
Well, I have the same. It's the same.
Got it. And then for the AFC, that'll be the Chiefs versus the Ravens and Ravens at home. I'm going to guess they are 4-point favorites. 4.5?
3.5.
3.5. Gotcha. I'm going to say the Ravens win. And I'm rooting for the Ravens. How about you?
It's a tough one. I think...
I'm just like, I'm over Mahomes. He's so annoying to watch anymore. It's like, he just doesn't...
If we obviously won't know because the AFC game's first. But if the Niners are going to win, I think I'd be more confident in the Chiefs beating the Niners than the Ravens.
Really? I mean, the Ravens handled them quite handily. Oh, yeah,
they did, didn't they? Well,
yeah, Brock Purdy had, like, 3 interceptions in that game.
I don't know. I think it's because of the mystique of Mahomes and all that. And if Mahomes wins, then it's like, oh, they're in the Super Bowl, so... Yeah, I mean, I want it to be Ravens Lions Super Bowl, and then I would cheer for the Lions in the Super Bowl. I think the Ravens have a good shot to win. So give me double Ravens.
I'm so pissed off the Packers.
Or Ravens Niners.
The Packers ended up losing.
Yeah,
they had no business losing that game.
Yeah,
and then Super Bowl. Well, who do you got?
Yeah, Super Bowl. So from that, I would have what I want would be Lions over. No, Lions over Chiefs would be cool, but I picked the Ravens. So let's say Lions over Ravens is what I would want, and Ravens over Lions is probably what I think will happen.
It's unfortunate that all is what we want is
the
NFC.
Then it's the 49ers. So 49ers and Ravens. So I'll pick the Ravens over the 49ers in that scenario.
It sounds like we're on the same page and wanting the thing that is the least likely or the lesser of the two.
Right.
Like we're just rooting for the lesser evil and the more unlikely outcome.
Yeah, I feel like a Lions-Ravens Super Bowl, I'll be the less like intensely cheering. But if it's Lions-Chiefs, I'll be rooting against the Chiefs. If it's either AFC team against the Niners, I'll really want the AFC team to win. So Lions-Ravens is the most tame Super Bowl for my rooting preference. But anyway, we'll be back when there's news. We're officially in the off season, so our schedule will be whatever happens. So in the meantime, for Mike, I'm Ian. Thanks for listening.